Morning. Today's daf in Kedushin is Ayin Zayin. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is Lona Zech and Nishmas Lipik Avila Bashmuel. We are nine Vav Amud Beis. We are towards the top of the Amud, right as the lines become wide. We are starting with the words today of Ein Bodkim and Mizbech Ulamala. Misha talked about the screening, necessary screening that is required in order to marry somebody, just to make sure that their genealogy is good. The Mishnah, interestingly, told us yesterday, the Mishnah back in Ayin Vav Amud Aleph, that the that when you marry a girl, so you have to check her family, but specifically, really her maternal side. Check the maternal nature of her. The Mishnah talked about four different mothers: her mother, her maternal grandmother, her paternal grandmother, and four women, and then the women, and then one mother above that, and then for a Yisrael and a Levia, even one mother above that, and possibly, as we discussed yesterday, even one mother above that as well. So in other words, a background check of potentially 16 different women when you marry somebody. That is the that was the Mishnah. The Gemara noted the obvious challenges the Mishnah presented. How come we're not checking him? How come we're not checking her parents, her father's side? So the Gemara says because that's well known and understood. Meaning if there was some sort of yichus issue with the men, so people would know about it. But when it comes to the women, women just do a better job in general covering it up, and that's why you have to research that matter. There was, however, a number of points that the Mishnah made regarding things which basically served as pre-screening, meaning that if a person was involved in a certain activity, so that's basically that's pre-screened, meaning he must have been checked out already before, and so therefore you don't have to go through the investigation. We ended off the shir yesterday by the Gemara pointing out that according to some Amoraim, the Gemara quotes Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, our Mishnah is not the normative approach. It's not the Shitas HaRabim, but rather the Shitas HaRabim is that generally speaking, everyone has a Cheskes Kashrus. That when you meet somebody and they're part of the community and they're members of the community, so you can safely assume that there are no yichus issues, unless there's an error, unless there's a challenge. If there's a challenge where somebody contests their genealogy, so then you have to do an investigation. But otherwise, there's a presumed state of yichus for every family. That is the opinion of Rav Yehuda Marav that we saw at the end of yesterday's shir. We are now on the Gemara. We're going to continue, and we're basically going to go through the list of things which serve as, if you will, pre-screening, meaning the person already checks out based on other activities that the person is involved with. Ain bokim le mizbech v'lamala my time yilav debad kua lo hava maskelei. Okay, somebody's working in the Beis HaMikdash, a Kohen is working and doing the Avoda around the Mizbeach. So the Gemara says they checked him out already. There's no way that he would be doing the Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash unless he wasn't already checked out. Now we're talking about the Duchan. This is a platform the Levim would be standing on when they are part of the choir. Shira that was done in the Beis HaMikdash is part of the Avoda. The Gemara in Sukkah at the end talks about whether or not the Iker Shir is Bepeh, Iker Shir Bekli, whether or not the main component of the music is done through vocals or is it done through instrument. But either way, in order to be standing on the platform so you are a Levi who is involved in the Avoda through your singing, and again, my time, Amar Mar, Sheshama Yoshe, Miyachse Kuna, Miyachse Leviya. So who was standing on the platform? Miyachse Leviya, meaning people with Yichus already. In other words, again, put simply, they were pre-checked. V'lo b'Sanhedrin l'mala. Somebody was involved in the Sanhedrin, and no need for any type of background check. My taima, d'ni Rav Yosef k'shen shebeis din menuka mitzedekach menuka mikol mum. In order to be a member of Beis Din, you have to be menuka mitzedek, meaning you have to be righteous. That's, you know, one of the basic requirements of being part of the Sanhedrin. And furthermore, additionally, you also have to be menuka mikol mum. You can't have a blemish. Now, generally speaking, we understand blemish to mean a physical blemish.
But didn't we have Gerim that were part?
Gerim can be part of. Right now, we're talking about the Sanhedrin, so it could be that this is a, you know, there's a higher standard, right? There is a concept we saw earlier of a Beis Din Shel Ger, but this is a Sanhedrin, so they have a higher standard. So Kach Manukim Mikol Mum Amar Marema Maikra Kolach Yafa Ra'yasi Umum Ein Bach. The pasuk in Shir Hashirim, which the Gemara understands B'derech Hadrush, that's a reference to the beauty and the and a lack of a blemish regarding the Beis Din, regarding the Sanhedrin. This is more than just a physical blemish. It means psul yuchsin, meaning that they cannot have a genealogical flaw. So Eima Mumamamish, the Gemara says, okay, but that's an assumption, meaning the pasuk actually says mum. So maybe it means that they don't have an actual physical blemish, meaning what the Gemara is entertaining right now is a havamina, is much like a kohen can't have a physical blemish when he's doing the avoda, so too a member of Sanhedrin cannot have a physical blemish if they're going to be a standing member of the Sanhedrin. So Amar Vach, Rabbi Yaakov, Amar Krav, Yisyat Shvisham, Imach B'dom Imlach. So the Gemara says that when Moshe was given the first Sanhedrin, so they're going to stand next to him. And the Gemara's understanding over here is it's not that they're just going to physically stand next to him, but they're going to be similar to him.
But Moshe himself didn't have the greatest genealogy. His parents were aunt and nephew.
Okay, I've heard somewhere in the course of my history somebody raised that issue. This is not the first time I'm hearing this issue. Right. The only thing I could say is that was before Muhammad Har Sinai, and so therefore it wasn't Arayus. But okay, point well taken. V'dilma mishum shchina. So the Gemara says, well, maybe the idea of them standing next to him is that they're going to be the next to the Shechina, so meaning that he's going to give over some of his ability of Nevius, which actually we saw in the Pesukim, he does give over to them, and maybe that's the intent of the Pesuk, but not that they have to be the standard of Yichus that Moshe Rabbeinu had. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Kra, V'akam Alecha V'nasu Itcha B'dom Emlecha. So the Gemara says that no, the Pesuk clearly indicates that the sitting next to Moshe Rabbeinu is an indication that they had to be similar to Moshe Rabbeinu, and so just like he was Bali Mum, and again we're understanding Bali Mum over here meaning not without a blemish of Yichus, so too a member of the Sanhedrin had to be without a blemish of Yichus. So now, our Mishnah said that if you were given any type of position of authority over a community, so that also is a pre-check, and no investigation is necessary. The Gemara says, now, obviously that's built on an assumption. The assumption is that we don't appoint anybody who is a psul into a position of authority, or a minu. The Gemara says, okay, but hakok shirin ladon din imamros, vein hakok shirin ladon din nefashos. Everybody is qualified to judge monetary law. Not everybody is qualified to judge capital crime, capital law. And when we say hakol, we're coming to include even a mamzer. Meaning, so a mamzer has a potential possibility of serving on the Beis Din and on the Beis Din of monetary law. So Amar Rabbi Birushalayim v'chein tini Rav Shimon Brazer b'kedushe debei Levi Birushalayim. So the Gemara says, okay, what we're going to have to say is that various communities have varying degrees of acceptance and allowance in terms of being part of a Beis Din. Generally speaking, the default halacha is that to be part of a monetary Beis Din, a Beis Din Shel Shlosha, so you don't have to have Yichus. You could be a Mamzer, and you could be part of a Beis Din. That's generally speaking the truth, the case. However, in certain communities, and the Gemara here pinpoints Yerushalayim as being one of them, in certain communities, there was a threshold in which you could not be part of the Beis Din unless you had Yichus, and unless you had nothing less than perfect Yichus. So the Gemara says, so you're right. Meaning the baseline halacha is you could be a mamzer and still serve on the Beis Din. And that would not obviously that would not serve as a pre-check, because you could be a mamzer and serve on the Beis Din. However, if you know that you're part of a community where they only accept miyuchas for the Beis Din, like Yerushalayim, so then it serves as a pre-check. So the Gemara says, if you're a gabit staka, now you're a gabit staka, that means that you're going around and you're collecting money. Now, collecting money becomes a personal issue. for whatever reason. So now the Gemara says, look, they obviously need somebody with yichus in order to collect money, because you're going around, you're knocking door to door, and the Gemara notes that you're doing more than just knocking door to door. The Gemara quotes over here the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Amar Mimashkin al Tztaka, Ve'afilu Be'er Shabbos. Gemara says that as a guy with Tztaka, you could do things which are, generally speaking, rude. And I say rude, by the way, I'm being nice when I say rude. You can, let's say somebody owes tzedakah, meaning he pledged tzedakah, there's an understanding that he's giving a certain amount of tzedakah, and he's delinquent, and he's not up to date in terms of his tzedakah payment. So you, the gabbai tzedakah, are allowed, right, this is a Mishnah Baba Basra, we'll see this soon enough, so it might not be a Mishnah, it may be a Brisa, but either way, but you're allowed to go over to him, take collateral from his house against his outstanding debt, and you can even do so in Erev Shabbos. And as Rashi over here points out, but we don't really need Rashi to tell us this information. Erev Shabbos, everyone is a little bit more tense and a little bit more pressured, and you can do this on Erev Shabbos. So now, when you go into somebody's house on Erev Shabbos and take a collateral because the person is delinquent, so what do you think he's going to feel about you? Not kind of questions, kind of self evident. And what is he going to say about you? So that's exactly the point the Gemara says. V'im isa de'ika isle kala. So now, if you have some sort of mum, if you have some sort of yichus blemish, so he's going to call you out on whatever you have, right? And
oh, yeah,
exactly. That's exactly the point. So the okay. So the good.
So we'll know.
Okay. So people would know. Okay. Ushpezechnida Rav Adar Ba'ava Gior Hava. Okay, the landlord of Rav Adar Ba'ava was a ger. Okay, the most recent landlord that we dealt with was a mamzer. But I don't mean that in a pejorative way. I meant that as just simply a statement of fact. But that was the last landlord we met with here. In this case, this particular landlord was a ger, and who frequently stayed by him was Rav Adar Ba'ava. Vahava kamanse ihu Rav Bibi. And the landlord and Rav Bibi were having the following discussion/debate. Mar amar ana avina sarusa damasa, mar amar ana avina sarusa damasa. So I don't want to say that it was a political race, because I don't know politics circa, I don't understand politics nowadays. So, and I certainly don't, and I don't understand politics of the 3rd century, but basically, both were running for office of the community. So the landlord against Rav Bibi. Also coming to Rav Yosef, Armalu Tanina, Sumtas, Imalach, Amalach. So they go to Rav Yosef, and Rav Yosef says, I don't even know what this debate is over. Meaning, there's only really one candidate for this position of authority, because the landlord, who's a ger, he can't serve as a leader. The Torah says, "Sumtasim alecha melech mikarev achecha." When the Torah talks about establishing a king, now I understand the Torah is talking about a king, but basically we're extrapolating. Any position of authority has to come mikarev achecha. Komasim shata masim lo yeha ala mikarev achecha. Anytime you're putting in a position of authority, so the person has to be mikarev achecha. He can't be a ger. So
Talion and his partner were ger. So how did they become this?
Shmaya Vav Talion. Right. So could be, again, I heard that as well, could be that that's Torah leadership. Torah leadership is different than a political power. Okay, that's what I heard as a suggested answer, although I don't have a source for that, but I heard that. So the Gemara says, so Rav Yosef is saying, there's nothing to talk about. I don't even understand why this is a race. So Amalei Rav Adar Ba'ava Va'afilu Mamu Yisrael. So Rav Adar Ba'ava says, wait one second. Now Rav Adar Ba'ava is talking about his landlord. So Rav Adar Ba'ava is, you know, obviously a little bit sympathetic towards his landlord. I said it well. So he's a little bit sympathetic to his landlord. So Amar Le out to be so mikervachecha Karina Bay. So okay. So the Gemara says, oh, so his mother was a Jew. So in other words, he
was a ger from his family.
He was a ger, right? He was only a ger from quote unquote his father's side. So the Gemara says, Hilkach Rabibi digaveraba hu la'im b'mila d'shmaya omar la'im b'mila d'masa. So the Gemara says, fine. So they basically struck some sort of compromise position where Rabibi will take care of mila d'shmaya, spiritual matters. spiritual matters, Rashi says that he served as a gabit tzedakah, and
it's ironic because in Perkei Avos it says stay away from authority, and he's like fighting to be in the.
I don't understand the need, but okay, everyone's different in this regard. So the so Mila Dishmaya, so he, Rashi says, he took on the position of being a Gabbai Tzedakah and the Gabbai the Shul, giving out the Aliyahs. Okay, very very important position. And the landlord took on the position of being Mila Damasa, things that have to do with the city, meaning Rashi says any of the city needs. Right, all city planning goes towards the landlord. Amar Abaye Hilkach Man Demishrei Tzurba Mirabanan Beushpezechnei Lashrikar of Adabava. And Abaye says just another lesson to learn from this whole story, and that is that if you're a landlord and you're going to have a tenant, make sure to have a tenant like Rav Adabava Deyadala Mahavech Lebezchuse, because in the event that you ever need some good sage rabbinic advice, so you have a tenant like Rav Adar Bar Ava who's going to fight on your behalf. Rabbi Zera Metapa Bahu, and now the Gemara has varying Amorayim regarding whether or not they would allow a convert, not a full convert, but like in other words, you know, one of the parents is a convert. So various Amorayim had issues of whether or not they would allow him to serve as any type of leader. The Rabbi Zera Metapabuhu, Rabbi Zera would allow it. Rabbi Bar Avua Metapabuhu, Rabbi would allow it. B'marava, in Eretz Yisrael, no. In Eretz Yisrael, they would not allow anyone without pristine yichus to serve as any type of authority position. Afilu resh kuri lo mukmi minayu. So in Eretz Yisrael, so even the person in charge of weights and measurements, they would not appoint that person unless he was mikar vachecha. And in the city of Narada, now it's interesting because Narada obviously is in Bavel, right? But even the one who was in charge of irrigation, right, to make sure that everyone would only take from their, in other words, their Rashi over here describes where there was basically a public water source, and everyone would take turns in order of taking from the water source. And again, so now you're talking about an allocation. Somebody was in charge of that allocation, and so the only one they would appoint in terms of a position of authority, even though it's, we're not talking about a high ranking officer, but still the point being that they would only take somebody mikar vachecha. Well, they had a high yichus to begin with,
so that's why they wanted even that position to.
Okay. All right, Rabbi Yossi Amraf Mishahaya. So Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah. This takes us back to the Mishnah that we saw on yesterday's daf on the Amud Aleph. That if somebody was signing on a document, right, so then he would be considered pre-checked, pre-screened. And the Gemara says, "My time a document dayake umachasme." And the Gemara says exactly for that reason, meaning nobody would be signing on a document according to Rav Yossi unless he was pre-checked to make sure that he had good yichus. Rabbi Chanina ben Atignos v'chulei. And then we get to the last line of the Mishnah, and this is the end of yesterday's daf. Rabbi Chanina ben Atignos said that anyone who was muhtav beistartia of the king. What exactly does that mean? So the Gemara explains a little bit better. Amar Rav, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Bechayelo Shel Beis David. We're talking about the soldiers of Beis David. Soldiers of Beis David had Rashi describes, basically they were like Miluim. In other words, they would serve and they serve for a month and then there'd be a rotation. So these soldiers also went through a background check. Why? I'm Rav Yosef, Mikra. So Rav Yosef says, well, the Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim is going to give us an indication of why we're talking about soldiers now. Soldiers needed a background check. V'his yachsim b'tzava b'melchama. So actually, the Pasuk in the Navi says it very clearly, that they had yichus. In other words, in order to be a soldier in David's army, so you needed yichus. V'taim amai, I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Rav Kedeshitei z'chusam u'z'chus avosam misai. So the Gemara says, because when you're a soldier, obviously you are in a precarious situation and you need zechuyos, you need merits. So you will have not only your own merits, but you have zchus avos, and that will help you in battle. And that's why David HaMelech looks specifically for those people with zchus avos. So the Gemara says, now on this point that the Gemara just made, that David HaMelech looks specifically for zchus avos, there are a number of psukim that seem to indicate that he didn't really care for zchus avos. Va'ikat tzelek ha'amoni. So the Gemara is going to note a number of soldiers that we know about in David's army that did not have zchus avos. Tzelek ha'amoni. So it sounds like he was from the tribe of Ammon. That's not Yichus. He does go back to Avram Avinu, but still. In other words, that's not Yichus. My love, da'asim ha'amon lo di'yasiv bi'amon. So the Gemara says, no. He is from Ammon, but not genealogically from Ammon. He actually lived in Ammon. Va'ika Uriah Hachiti, perhaps the most popular of the soldiers of David. So there was Uriah Hachiti. So again, my love, da'asi miches. So doesn't it mean that he comes from Ches? And again, that means he's not having zchus avos lo di'yasiv b'Ches. So the preposition is that he was not from Ches, but he was living in Ches. But that he was a Jew, meaning with Yichus. Va'ika iti hagiti. So he was from, again, v'chitem ha'achanam di'yasiv b'Gas. Now maybe over there, it just simply means that he was living in Gas, but he wasn't from Gas. V'hamar Rav Nachman iti agite ba'u batla. So the Gemara says, yeah, but elsewhere, the Gemara talks about how he was mevatel avodah zarah. You can only be mevatel avodah zarah if you are a non-Jew. A Jew cannot be mevatel avodah zarah. And va'od, and the Gemara says, and let's put this entire discussion to rest. David HaMelech did not look for the best yichus for his army, and the Gemara says, and I'll tell you how I know that. I'm Rav Yehuda Marav. Arba meos yoladim hayulol David. David had a legion in his army that was made up of 400 soldiers, but these soldiers over here were like super soldiers, in that they were all v'kulam b'nei yifas Torah hayu. They were all products of Eishes Yifas Torah, which means that their mothers were captured on the battlefield, impregnated on the battlefield. So that means that these soldiers over here weren't even Jewish. V'kulam estaprim kumi u'megadlam bluyos. And they were a very intimidating looking. They had a specific haircut. They allowed a long lock of hair to grow in the back of their head. The kulam yoshim b'karni shal zahav, and they were escorted in golden chariots. Vayu mahalchim b'roshi gayasos, and they were always at the front of the legion. So basically, when an enemy army, the first look that they saw when they saw the Jewish army was these 400 super, basically superheroes standing in the front of the army, and they created tremendous fear and intimidation. Vehein bali Agrippa shall base David, and they were basically the strength of David's army. So, to the question now of Yichus, the Gemara now is basically saying, I don't understand. I don't think that David HaMelech had such wonderful yichus. The front line of David HaMelech's army was made up of these 400 non-Jewish men. So the Gemara says, no. They were there for just the psychological warfare. They were not there to actually fight. They were just there put in the front, so in order to intimidate. It was just for the purpose of psychological warfare. But those people who actually fought in battle, so they were miyuchas. Okay, adkan. Takes us to the end of yesterday's daf. We now are starting today's daf, Ayin Zayin Amud Aleph. And we start with the Mishnah. Okay, we're talking about a challah, words of introduction. And then we'll start with the Mishnah. The word challah literally means hollow. In fact, if you think about it, this happens every now and then. The English word hollow actually, most probably, derived from the Hebrew word halal. Halal, if you say it, and you take out a lamed, or if you, the English word has two L's. I don't know if that was a good point, but basically the two words are the same. And what is a challah? It means that there was a kohen, and his kedushas kahuna has been removed. He's basically hollow. He has no kedushas kahuna. How do you become a challah? So there really are one of two ways to become a challah. Number one, and this is the way the Torah describes it, is that a kohen marries a woman he's not allowed to marry. The most classic case in the Torah is where a Kohen Gadol takes an almana and marries the almana. And what's going to end up happening is lo yichalal zaro. What's going to happen is that the child, the result of that union, is that their child is going to be a Kohen, but devoid of Kedushas Kohuna. As a chalal, you can't do the avod. You don't have Kedushas Kohuna. Okay. That's one way to become a chalal. A second way to become a chalal is, as we're going to be about to learn in our Mishnah, is that your father was a chalal. So if your father was a chalal, so that means you too now are going to become a chalal. In other words, this trait of chalal is passed through paternity. It's passed through the father. Okay, so that is the basic idea behind a chalal. Two ways to become a chalal, either for bin union or the father's a chalal and he's going to pass it on. Okay, the second part of the mission, which we're going to also see as we get through the is how do you pass on the status of ger? As we've been discussing over the course of this parak, a ger can do one of two things. On one hand, a ger cannot marry a kohen. Okay, a giyaris is not allowed to marry a kohen. Although, as we're going to see in our Mishnah, there are shades of opinions in terms of to what degree can a ger not marry a kohen, and also, as we learned earlier in a Masechta as well, a ger is allowed to marry a mamzeres because a ger is not considered part of kahal. So a ger is allowed to marry a mamzeres. And so basically the question that we're also going to be dealing with in the Mishnah is, does this status of ger get passed on to the next generation or not? Okay, so basically we're talking now about the passing along of the status of chalal and the passing along of the status of ger. Those are the two topics that we're going to be discussing in this new Mishnah in today's daf. Bas chalal zachar psula min hakohuna. The daughter of a male chalal is disqualified from marrying into the kohuna. La'olam. And the Mishnah over here wants to emphasize that emphatically for future, all future generations, this will be the case. So as long as that is a chalal, the next generation is also going to be a chalal, and the next generation, v'chula v'chula, and it's going to continue. Now, why does it say bas chalal zachar? Why the daughter of a chalal zachar? Why not talk about the son of a chalal zachar? But as we already learned earlier, and this is a good place to see it as well in our Mishnah, because we already pointed out that if you are kohenes, you are not prohibited from marrying a male chalal. The prohibition in the Torah is for a kohen not to marry a chalala. So that's why our Mishnah is speaking specifically about the daughter of a chalal, as long as that is a chalal, so that gets passed on to the next generation. Yisrael shenasa chalala bitok shera l'kahuna. Now, if Yisrael marries a chalala, their daughter is going to be shera l'kahuna, meaning that if dad is not a chalal, if dad is just a regular Jew, a Yisrael, so even though he marries a chalala, that does not get passed on to the next generation. Chalal shenasa bas Yisrael bitok psula l'kahuna. If a chalal marries a bas Yisrael, the daughter will be disqualified for kohuna because dad passes that on. Now, the Mishnah, although there are only three lines in the Mishnah that we did, the Mishnah is repetitive. Meaning, this point in the Mishnah was already said in the first line of the Mishnah. The Gemara is going to point that out, that the Mishnah is superfluous. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Basger Zachar Kebas Chalal Zachar. Okay, now, moving on to the topic of Ger. Meaning, that's it. I mean, we're done with Chalal from the Mishnah's perspective. Now we're moving on to Ger. So according to Rav Yehuda, the rules that we just learned regarding Chalal are going to be the same rules governing a Ger. If dad is a Ger, he passes on his, it's not a word, but in this context hopefully you'll understand, he's passing on his Gerness to the next generation. The next generation is going to have the status of Ger. Bas ger zachar kebas chalal zachar, which means that the next generation is the daughter of the next generation is not allowed to marry a kohen, because the daughter of the father who's a ger is going to be a ger in this regard. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer Yisrael shenasa giyaris bitok sher lekahuna veger shenasa bas Yisrael bitok sher lekahuna aval ger shenasa giyaris bitok psula lekahuna. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says no. The only time that the ger status is going to be passed on to the next generation is only if mom and dad are gerim. If mom and dad are gerim, then and only then is the ger status going to be passed on to the next generation. If either mom or dad are a ben or bas Yisrael, even though their spouse is a ger, the next generation is not going to have that ger status, and that next generation would be allowed to marry a kohen. Echad ger ve'echad avad meshucharim. If you have a convert, if you have an eved meshuchar, which is essentially a convert as well, like we discussed time and again, afilo ad yudaros achitei imam meYisrael. That will perpetuate for 10 generations. And when it says ad yudaros and it says 10 generations, really it means ad infinitum. Just the right. There's just the Mishnah over here, probably, if not definitely, borrowing the language of the Torah. The Torah, sometimes when articulating how this status is going to continue in perpetuity, the Torah uses also this construct of 10 generations. Specifically, the Torah does that by Mamzer. So the Mishnah over here, describing the ger, a ger or an eved meshuchrar, is going to continue for 10 generations. Achitei imo miYisrael, until mom is miYisrael. Once mom is miYisrael, so then the status will come to an end. Rabbi Yossi Omer av ger shenasa giyaros bituk sher lekahuna, and Rabbi Yossi takes another position, which is that even if mom and dad are gerim, the resulting child is going to be sher lekahuna. So by Chalal, actually, the Mishnah is very clear-cut. Meaning, by Chalal, there's no point of disagreement in the Mishnah. If dad is a Chalal, the resulting child is going to be a Chalal as well. When it comes to Ger, we have a multitude of positions in the Mishnah. We'll discuss more about the Ger later on. But for the remainder of today's daf, we're going to be discussing a Chalal.
Didn't you establish all these rules
These rules of psul kahuna have not been discussed before. Previously,
status is achieved based on
What the first mission did in our perek was just simply introduce us to these. To these categories, but the Mishnah never discussed up until this point in time how these statuses get passed on from one generation to the next. This is the first Mishnah discussing that. Maila Olam. So first of all, the Gemara right away picks up on the language of the Mishnah that the Chalal status is going to exist in perpetuity. So Ma'u Detema Midah Hava Emetz Shavei Adam. The Gemara has a Hava Mina, very interesting Hava Mina. The Gemara doesn't even explain the Hava Mina. So it's a little bit difficult to even understand what this Havamina is about. But the Gemara says, I might have thought, look, we have other areas of psul being passed on from one generation to the next through the father, but we have Mitzri Nadomi, and we know that's only passed on for 3 generations, and not even 3 generations. Meaning the 3rd generation is Mutar Slava Bakal. Malahan Lachar Shlosha Doros Afkan Nami Lachar Shlosha Doros Kamash Malan. So just like Mitzri Nadomi only exists for 3 generations and not more than that, I might have thought, and again, I'm not fully understanding, I'm just an admission on my part, I'm not fully understanding what this Havamina is, but I might have thought that the same thing is true regarding Chalal, that Chalal only exists for 3 generations and not more. So the Mishnah wants to tell us that that's not a Havamina, meaning that we're going to reject that Havamina, and that the status of Chalal could, in theory, exist in perpetuity. Yisrael shenasa chalala. If I have a Jew marrying a chalala, menahan emili, I'm Rav Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon. Okay, how do I know? In other words, the Mishnah gives us the rule, and the rules are very clear. The Gemara only wants to know, where do these rules come from? Where in the Torah do we see this idea that the chalal status is passed on through the father? So namar kan v'lo yichalal zaro be'amav, v'namar lahalan lo yitama bal be'amav. So the Gemara says that we have in the Torah the word chalal mentioned twice. Once regarding the Kohen Gadol marrying the Amana, where the Torah there describes that if they have a child, that child is going to be a chalal. We also have it in the beginning of Parshas Amor, where the Torah says, Lo yitama baba amav lahe chalal, where the Torah says that a Kohen cannot become defiled in coming into contact with a mace. Now, understand that's not about having children, but we do know the following: that when it comes to tumas meis regarding a kohen, that is only specific to male kohanim. Female kohanim are not subject to the prohibition of tumas meis. So malahalan zecharim v'lo nekevas, afkan zecharim v'lo nekevas. So what we have now is a classical gzera shava that just, or maybe a hekesh. But certainly a connection. We have this idea that, just like we know, Tumas Meis only applies to the male, not to the female. So this idea of halalness only applies to the male, not to the female. So the Gemara says, well, if you're right, ella me'ata bitu shekohen gadol shishare. Well, the Gemara says, well, if this is a male halacha, not a female halacha, so the Gemara says, well, I'll ask you a really simple question. You have the kohen gadol marrying the almana, and you're telling me now that based on this gzeira shava, the halacha only applies to male, not female. So then I would argue that the only child of the kohen gadol and the almana that's going to be a chalal is only going to be the male children, not the female children. So the Gemara says, no, we're going to will reject that outright. Miksiv beno zaroksiv. The Torah doesn't say lo yichalal beno. The Torah says lo yichal zaro. Zera means any child. Lo yichalal zaro be'amav. So the Gemara says bas beno tishtare. So the Gemara says, okay, but let's consider the following. What about now the daughter of the son of that union? So in other words, you had a kohen gadol marrying an amana. They had a son. The son is a chalal. But maybe we should argue that the daughter of said son should not be a chalal. Because once again, it's a male halacha. So the Gemara says, "Ksiv lo yichalal zaro, meiki zaro lo mahu bito psula af beno bito psula." So the Gemara says, "Okay, but again, that's going to be rejected outright as well, because we also know that his son's status will be just like his status, just like whatever he produces child-wise is going to be a halal. So too, whatever his son produces child-wise is also going to be a chalal as well. Bas bito titzar. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, so then maybe the daughter of his daughter should become aser. The Gemara says, im king, gzeir shava, maya hanilai. Oh yeah, Gemara here calls it gzeir shava. So the Gemara says that, well, that can't be, because we do have a gzeir shava, meaning that there has to be, to some degree, this being a male halacha as opposed to female halacha. So the Gemara says, so in that regard, any child that comes from his daughter is not going to be a chalal. The child that comes from his son, regardless of male or female, is going to be a chalal. But the child that results from his daughter is not going to be a chalal. Okay, so basically, again, the rule is very simple. All we did was just try to understand how that rule gets generated from the psukim. But the rule is that the chalal status is going to be passed on through the male, not through the female. Chal shenasa bas Yisrael bita psula. Okay. We learned in our Mishnah that if a chalal marries a bas Yisrael, the daughter is going to be pasul, because again, dad is a chalal. Now, hatana le'resha. Here the Gemara now notes that line of the Mishnah is a repetition of the first line of the Mishnah. And why the need for repetition? So, bas chalal zachar psulam in the kula olam. And the Gemara quotes the first line of the Mishnah. I did the tana resha Yisrael shenasa chalal tana nami seifa chalal shenasa bas Yisrael. So the Gemara says, and again, this is an answer that we seemingly have had almost every day here in the Gemara Kedushin, common answer, and that is symmetry. Okay, so you're right. It is a repeated point in the Mishnah, but once the Mishnah talked about a Bas Yisrael marrying a Chalala, so then we like the inversion of the Chalala marrying a Bas Yisrael. Okay. Masisim Deloka Rabbi Dustai Ben Yehuda. Now, this position of Dustai Ben Yehuda happens to have gotten a lot of airplay, especially here in the fourth parak. But here is really the central location of his position, which is the Tanya Rabbi Dustai Ben Yehuda Amar, Keshem She B'nei Yisrael, Mikvatara Lechalalos, Kach Benos Yisrael, Mikvatara Lechalalim. So, just like if a Yisrael married a Chalala, the resulting child is not going to be a Chalala. Rav Dustai says the opposite is also going to be true. If a Chalala was to marry a Benos Yisrael, the child is not going to be a Chalala. She is, the analogy is, she's like a Mikveh Yisrael. She will purify him, meaning that the children that they will not have his status. She'll purify the children. So my time is Rav Dustai Rav Yehuda, Makro lo yichalal zaro be'amav. Be'am echad hu de'mechel, b'shnei amamim eino mechel. Only when mom and dad are chalalim is the child going to be a chalal. But if one of the two is not a chalal, the resulting child is not going to be a chalal. Okay. And the Gemara just simply notes that our Mishnah is obviously not in accordance with Rav Dustai ben Yehuda. Tana rabbanu lo yichalal zaro ein li'ala zaro hi atzmo minayin. Interesting. Here's something we have not discussed. Although, again, if you've been around in the Gemara long enough, you know this is halacha. But in terms of the discussion of halal, the Torah doesn't actually say it straight out. A kohen gadol marries an amana, their child is halalim. What about she herself, meaning the almana? So, again, we know she herself becomes a chalala as well. In other words, the bias psul will passel her. Something we've already discussed. The question is minahani mili. What do you mean? How do we know that information? So that is what this brisa is taking up to discover. How do I know? Amar kavachomer. So the Gemara says, well, logical argument. And the deduction goes like this. Mazar shelo avad avera mischalel, he she'avra avera eino din she'mischalelas. Well, if the child who did nothing wrong, obviously, and that child is going to be branded a chalal, she who was involved in the avera of being an amana, being married to a Kohen Gadol, so for sure she's going to be a mischalelas. This is the argument of the Gemara. As an interesting point. And some... Well, the Gemara is going to jump on that point in just a moment. That, in fact, is going to be the Gemara's Pircha. Even before that point, Daniel is very good. Even before that point, just something to think about. This argument of the Gemara certainly falls short, considering that we know that that is exactly what happens in the case of a mamzer. Meaning, when you think about a mamzer, the child did nothing wrong, and meanwhile the child is branded with a mamzer, and meanwhile the parents, who are obviously involved in the avera, so their status doesn't change at all. So it's something to pause and to think about in terms of the Gemara makes this argument without flinching regarding a chalal, and meanwhile we know that this argument is just not true by a mamzer. Okay. That requires a that point requires attention. So, but anyway, who wants mo yichiach? Here now, Danny, the Gemara makes exactly your point. What do you mean? Just because they were involved in the Veira, consider him. He was, meaning the father. In this case, the Kohen Gadol. So, who avar Veira ve'in mischalal? So the Gemara says, dad, so his status doesn't get a change, and so this now provides a pircha to the kavachomer. So the Gemara says, malahu shekein ein mischala b'chol makom. Tamar bihi, shim mischalas b'chol makom. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you know what? By chalal, dad's position never gets affected. So it is a valid argument, but in the context of chalal, we never see regarding the man that a bias psul passels him. Regarding a woman, however, we see many times in the Torah where if she engages in a bias psul, she becomes disqualified. So basically what the Gemara is saying is that there's no even discussion to be had regarding the man that his status is going to be changed, but regarding her, we do find her status changed, and now the argument comes back. If the child's status is going to change, and the child wasn't involved in the Avera, her status for sure should change, and she was involved in the Avera. And then the Braisa says, and by the way, if all this doesn't sit well with you, meaning, if for whatever reason you don't like logical argument, then we'll give a reason in just a moment. So then the Gemara says, "I'm a kol lo yichalal zaro, lo yichulal ze sheyakashav neschalal." We're going to just basically learn it right out of the pasuk. The Torah says lo yichalal, and that seems to indicate that there was a status change. Now, regarding the child, there's no status change, meaning the child they have from conception is a chala. So when the Torah talks about a status change, the Torah can only be addressing really only one person, her, because she was in a state of being kshera, and now through this act of bia, she's going to go through a status change. So the Gemara says that really the pasuk itself is actually speaking about her. Shayakashav in his chalal. Mayin mashach lomar. Why did the Braisa, after giving the logical argument, the kavachomer, why did the Braisa then say, and we're going to darsh it straight out of the pasuk? V'chitem eikalem efrech malazor shekin yisira sobe avera. Amakra lo yichalal, lo yichalal zeh shayakashav in his chalal. So the Gemara says, because I can anticipate that you didn't like the kavachomer, and the reason why you didn't like the kavachomer is because how can you compare their offspring to her? The offspring is conceived, it is generated from day one as a halal. But that doesn't, through a kavachomer, immediately lead us to the conclusion that she herself is going to change because she was in a state of kashrus, and now you're going to turn her from being a ksheira to being a mechulalas. So the Gemara says, so the kavachomer is not good enough. If, right, you may not be happy with the kavachomer, so therefore you have the pasuk, the drush on the pasuk. Tana Rabbanan Ezu hi chalala kol shenoda min ha-psulim. A chalala is anyone who is born out of psulim. My psulim, that's a very generic term, a little crisper definition. Ilem ha-psulim lo. So the Gemara says, are we talking about someone who's puzzled to him? Now, let's say you have the case of Machzor Grushoso. A man marries a woman, divorces a woman, she marries somebody else in the interim. Then either becomes widow or divorced, she is forbidden to her original husband. And the Torah describes this as an abomination. I've quoted this Sforno many times before. The Torah uses such strong language to something which seems to be, although an avera, not as serious as other averas in the Torah, where the Torah describes as being a toeva. What is it? Why is it an abomination? The Sforno says because basically what this is legalized adultery. In other words, basically, it provides an opportunity for a woman to leave her marriage, go be with another man, then go back to her husband, you know, all through quote-unquote marriage and divorce. Basically, it's legalized adultery. So that's why it's referred to as a toeva. But anyway, our Gemara over here is picking up on the following. Toeva he toeva, vein b'nei toavim. So, she's an abomination, the Torah says, but the he is an exclusion. The children are not toavim, meaning the children are not puzzle. So, back to the Braisa. The Braisa says, what is a chalal? Something that is created through psulim. And again, we're just trying to pinpoint, what does that mean, psulim? I'm Rav Yehuda, achikam reizu chalala, kol shenodu min psul kahuna. Somebody who is a result of psul kahuna. Nolda in lo, nolda lo. So the Gemara says, now, that's only if there's a birth. So the Gemara says, harei amanu grusha v'zona delo nolda, v'kahav yechalala. So the Gemara says, you have a widow, a grusha, or a zona, and they were not born that way. That obviously comes over the course of their lifetime, and yet they are disqualified from kahuna. Amaraba hachi kamar. So the rabbi says once again. Now we're going to give a sharper, crisper definition. Ezu chalala muskeres. What is a chalala that is muskeres? So shalom hayelah shasa kosher klal koshenodom im psul kahuna. We're talking about the birth of a chalala. Meaning, you're right. There are ways in which a chalala can be manufactured through a woman later in her life. She becomes an almana, she becomes a grusha. What the Bryce over here is discussing, and the only thing the Bryce is discussing, is someone who is a congenital chalala. So, somebody who is born from a psul kahuna. Now, maimus keres, what exactly does that mean? I'm Rav Yitzchak Bar Avin, achi kamar, ezehi chalala sheikram midivrei Torah, vein tzrichon lafarsh midivrei sofrim. What is the halal, or halala, that is explicitly mentioned in the Torah, where it's a congenital halala? The answer is where they had the psul kahuna, where the Kohen Gadol married the almana, and the resulting child congenitally is a halala. Kol shenodam im psul kahuna. Okay. Tan rabbanan amana 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 inu chayv ela achas. Grusha 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 inu chayv ela achas. Amanu grusha v'chalala zona bezman she'im keseder chayv kol achas v'achas. Now I'm not going to explain any of this. All this will become explained as we go through the Gemara. Zinsa v'nis chalala v'nis garsha v'nis amala inu chayv ela achas. Okay. I didn't explain any part of this brisa whatsoever, because what's coming up is the Gemara's full explanation of each point of the brisa. Let's begin. You marry a widow three times over, you're only going to be chayev one lav. Obviously, we're talking about the kohen. Now, hi amana echidam ilem v'sheba al amanas Reuven v'al amanas Shimon v'al amanas Levi. Now, if we're suggesting over here that we're having a Kohen who's having relations with, and by the way, I say Kohen, I really mean Kohen Gadol, because Kohen is mutter, is permitted to marry an amana. If a Kohen Gadol is having relations with three different widows from three different men, so the Gemara says, amayinu chai v'al achas. That Kohen Gadol is subject to not one set of lashes, but obviously that Kohen Gadol is subject to three set of lashes. And also, I would call into question not the eligibility, but the fitness of this Kohen Gadol, if this is what this particular Kohen Gadol is doing. But the Gemara says, okay, sorry, that was editorial on my part. So the Gemara says, Hari Gufa Muchlakin, Hari Shemos Muchlakin. But the Gemara says, of course that Kohen Gadol is going to be subject to three sets of Makos, because even though the Avera is one Avera, but it's with three different women who are widows from three different men. So there's nothing to talk about. Of course, of course that coin is going to be subject to three set of makos. El Shaba alamana achas shalosh bia. So we're describing a coin who has relations with one widow, but three times over. So hechidami idolo asur bay. So the Gemara says, now if he did not receive a warning in between each one of the bias, so pshita deno chayv al achas. Well, there I don't need a brisa. Meaning that's obvious. So Ella de Asrube Akol Chada V'Chada. So it must be that the Kohen received a warning before each one. So Amayno Chay V'Lachas. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, so then I don't understand the Brisa. Then he should be subject to three sets of Makos. Vatanan. This takes us to the very basics of the halachas of receiving malchus. Nazir shayya shosi ayin kolayim kulayin achayv alachas. If the Nazir is sitting there with a bottle of wine and he's drinking it all day, so he's only going to be chayv to one set of lashes. Amrlo al tishta al tishta v'hu shose chayv al kolachas v'achas. However, if he keeps receiving a warning before he drinks, so he's going to be receiving malchus for every warning that he received. So the Gemara says, so our Kohen Gadol, who's having relations, even though it's with the same amana, but if he's receiving a warning every time, so then of course he's going to be chayv al kolachas. So we're talking about a woman who was one woman widowed three times over. Now, you and I know that third man shouldn't be marrying her. Okay, as per the Gemara that we learned back in Yevamos, we know that. But right now, we're here. Meaning she's an amana three times over. So it is one woman, although widowed three times. So now the argument you could have made, now you understand how this is now a fine point in halacha, because you could have made the argument that although she's one woman, so it's guf echad, but her status of widow comes from three different men. So now gufa muchlakim beinam valeika. So sorry, kamash malan gufa muchlakim beinam valeika. In order for there to be compound malkios, there has to be three different women. Okay, so that is that brings us to the first part of the brisa. How even though she is a widow three times over, but because it was only bia achas and it was only guf achas, so therefore it's only one set of makas. That is the first part of the brisa. Okay, let's put a marker over here in the Gemara. Tomorrow we start right away with the case of amana grusha v'chalala zona, a woman who is a widow, a divorcee, a chalala, and a zona, specifically in that order. And when the man has relations with such a woman, he's subject to four isurim of the Torah. Now, this brings us to the topic of ein isur chal al isur. How can that be? We generally say we don't have one isur lay on top of another isur. So that is where we're going to be starting tomorrow's daf.